And now another no-brainer money-saving tip from Progressive.
That doesn't sound good.
Paper shredder's jammed, but I think I fixed it.
Oh, well, try shredding these $50 bills then.
Seems like it's working.
Better try another $400.
Stop. Instead of using money, use regular paper. And here's a better tip from Progressive on how not to waste money. Don't pay too much for car insurance. Drivers who switch and save could save hundreds. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Potential savings will vary.
Welcome to another episode of the Dose of Leadership podcast, the show that brings you inspiring and educational interviews with today's most relevant and motivating leaders. Each episode is dedicated to highlight real-life leadership and influence experts who dedicate their lives to the pursuit of the truth, common sense, and courageous leadership. And now, here's your host, Richard Ryerson.
Hey, welcome to the show. So happy you're tuning in. Great conversation today with Michael Monteferrani. He's the President and Chief Executive Officer of Envision, which is located here in my hometown of Wichita, Kansas. It's got manufacturing locations in Wichita, Kansas City, plus 16 base supply centers across the United States. They employ over 500 people, and half of them are blind. And I had the privilege to tour the facilities here. I've always known about Envision. They've been around here since 1933, but I'd never really knew them, if you know what I mean by that. I had the privilege to tour the facilities, and I was just blown away by their manufacturing facility, first and foremost, where 91%, over 90% of the employees are visually impaired or blind. And this is a manufacturing facility in a warehouse, and these people are walking around and they're doing these work and unassisted on their own. It was just very inspiring to see. And in the office, seeing these people work on computers and they're completely blind, but they're listening to this program, audio program that lets them take customer service calls and operate a computer screen. They're listening in one ear to the computer screen so they can operate the computer and then listening to the customer in the other. It's just totally remarkable. Anyway, Envision, I like talking with CEOs, and I really wanted to highlight this organization just because it seems like to me it's one of these companies that are doing things right. And strategy or lack of strategy is always one of my pet peeves looking at organizations. And Michael's leadership style, he seems to me as someone that totally gets it from the strategy piece. When you walk around Envision, the strategic plan for the next couple of years is everywhere to be seen. It's very visible. It's based on five pillars of employment, growth, people, services, and community. And the strategic plan focuses on really two areas: maximizing margin impact, which is important for a business that's really been a nonprofit, but they're trying to, how can we generate more revenue? And then also, how can we maximize the mission impact? So it's all through employment, through outreach under the margin side, and then rehabilitation, education, research on the other. And I don't know, I'm just impressed with the whole leadership style of Michael Monteferrani and the strategic vision, if you will, and the actions behind it. And again, I just encourage you to learn more about Envision. Again, they make plastic bags, 3 million are produced daily, 26,000 customer service orders filled annually. They make a lot of stuff for the DOD. They make business cards. I think it's over 30 million business cards that they've done. The major contract with the Department of Defense. Just an amazing company and an amazing leadership culture from my perspective. So I got to sit down with Michael in his office. So the sound quality is a little different because I'm doing it face-to-face with Michael in his boardroom at the corporate offices there. But I think you'll enjoy this conversation. Gets a little insight to what it's like to be a CEO dealing with the challenges of a nonprofit and getting into the trying to generate more revenue. And it's just a fascinating conversation with a fascinating man, and I hope you get a lot of enjoyment out of it. All right, thanks for tuning in. Please, if you haven't done so, take the time to subscribe to Dose of Leadership. Rate and review. It means so much for the algorithm and keeping the visibility front and center on iTunes and in Stitcher. And again, let me hear from you. Like to see where you're at in your leadership journey. Send me an email to richard@doseofleadership.com, and you can go to the contact page in doseofleadership.com as well, and you can find more about my speaking and my business advisory services, as well as my coaching services. And you can also check out my Legacy Leader Blueprint course, which is a great way, introductory way to interact with me and to get the fundamentals of leadership embedded into your life and into the culture of your organization. Again, you can find out all this information at doseofleadership.com. All right. Thanks for tuning in. And here, without further ado, is my great conversation with President and CEO of Envision, Michael Monteferrante.
Well, Michael, I'm so excited to sit down with you face to face. Welcome to Dose of Leadership. Thanks for coming on the show.
Oh, great to be here today, Richard.
Well, I'm excited to be here, you know, face to face. I've done a handful of these. Normally, I'm in a studio talking with somebody, but I always thrilled to sit there and talk to someone face to face. It's more engaging and authentic conversation. I've been a fan of you for a long time. You know, I've known of you as kind of as a Wichita native and heard about your leadership style. I've been always impressed with it. You know, we know a lot of the same people. You know, but educate my listeners a little bit about Envision and what it does. I mean, it's well known here in Wichita, but for the rest of my listeners, what is the mission of Envision?
Yes. Envision is amazing. It's one of the oldest organizations in Wichita. Envision was formed in 1933.
Wow.
Here in is the Kansas Industries for the Blind. It's went through three or four name changes. And about 20 years ago, we became Envision. And the focus of Envision is to improve the quality of life and provide inspiration and opportunity for people who are blind or visually impaired. And we do that through employment, outreach, rehabilitation, research, and education.
Yeah, and you know, one thing, I toured the facility 3 weeks ago, and even though I knew about Envision, I really didn't know about Envision, you know,
yep,
until you saw it firsthand. And I was struck why when I walked onto this warehouse, this manufacturing facility, and if you would have told me that these people are blind, I would have said, you're lying to me. There's no way that these people are blind, but they're out there working around these machines. They're finding their way to the bathroom. I mean, it was really inspirational. I don't know.
Well, it's interesting that you share that, because I was recruited in 2005 to be on the board of Envision. And at that time, I was the CEO of Optima Bus in Park City, and they didn't have any manufacturing people on their board at that time in 05. And so I said, okay, well, I'd never heard of Envision again.
Yeah.
You mentioned that earlier. And I said, so let's do a tour and see it. So the tour was scheduled to be an hour in the manufacturing division that you were talking about. And 1 minute in the tour, I could not tell who was blind and who wasn't.
Yeah.
And I said, I'm in within 1 minute.
Right.
So I don't know what we're going to do for the next 59 minutes, but I'm in. And it was for that same fact. I was so inspired. I couldn't tell who was blind and who wasn't. And they're pumping out 3 million plastic bags a day on two shifts. I mean, these guys are knocking it out. And 90% of the direct labor on the Envision floor is blind, visually impaired.
It's just
90%.
It's just insanity.
So,
I mean, I wouldn't have known it until I saw it. And it was an inspiration. And then even in the office and watching these people who are legally blind, can't hardly see anything, and they got, what's the name of that software where they're
JAWS?
JAWS.
Yes.
And they played to me what they're hearing.
Yeah.
And it's indiscernible.
Yeah,
it's
can hear faster than we can read.
Right.
And that's what this is all about. When you get proficient at JAWS, you can operate a computer faster than a sighted person, because you're going on audio and that software is talking. We can't understand it.
Yeah.
It's moving at such a high rate of speed. It's gibberish without being trained, you know, and it's just your ear picks up on it. And it's faster than me and you can read.
I was thinking, and this is kind of off topic, but just from the way that the mind works or the body works. And, you know, they always say when you lose one of your senses, the others are greatly in.
Yep.
I just wonder if someone that can completely see, you know, because their hearing has got to be, I don't know, it's just, you know what I mean? That I just don't see how I could, when I listen to it, I'm like, there's no way I can understand what this is.
Well, we've got customer service people, right, that two earpieces, one connected to the computer.
Right.
So JAWS is talking to them, and then the other earpiece connected to the phone.
Yeah.
So we've got individuals that are hearing in one ear their customer service situation on the phone, then the other ear working the computer.
Yep.
So think about how dynamic that is.
Yeah.
Input coming in both ears separately, processing that, and then typing out the situation.
Yeah.
It's incredible.
I can see how that it would be exciting to be a leader of that organization. I could see that. So coming up on 5 years, correct? I mean,
yes.
5 years in a couple months, you'll be here as a CEO.
Correct.
How has it been? I mean, if you look at all of your CEO journeys or your leadership journey, how does this compare?
Well, it's the longest run I've had as a CEO. And so my background has pretty much been private equity turnarounds. And the time frame usually that they put you on in that situation is about a 3-year run. Mm-hmm. And so in 3-year run, they expect you to be able to rebrand the strategy in terms of what's going on, deliver and execute on that strategy, have the correct team assembled from a succession plan standpoint, and get it ready to be sold. And it's about a 3-year situation. So my previous 4 jobs have been almost exactly 3 years.
Right.
And then the companies are sold for an EBITDA multiple, mm-hmm. and then you move on to the next opportunity. This now is going on 5 years, and it seems like I'm just getting started.
Right.
And it's so much fun, and it's so inspirational, and the purpose of what we are accomplishing here as a team is just fantastic and very inspiring and refreshing. So, upon hire, we're looking at kind of a 10-year run mm-hmm. here on this deal, because the board of directors made it clear this is not a 3-year turnaround, right. and it won't be sold. And so they did want some longevity. There'd mm-hmm. been some churn on this job before sure. me. And so they wanted stabilization. So I committed for 10 years. And now I've been in for it for 10. I'm refreshed to go another 10.
Right.
So, I mean, I've been here 5. I mean, and I'm refreshed to go another 10. So that's how inspiring it is for me. So, one, just the refreshment of it mm-hmm. is fantastic. I mean, we've got things that are going on right now that we're just getting started on. And it feels like I started a couple of weeks ago.
I can see that. I wonder how what taking the skills from startup equities or turnaround equities, did a lot of those skills translate, or were there things you had to learn along the way, or things that surprised you in that kind of, you know?
Yeah, there's always surprises, sure. you know, no matter where you are in any type of situation in life, you know, you're always going to yep. have surprises. But absolutely, this is our vision of not-for-profits and the way I approach things and our board approach things is that we are in the business for the blind.
Yeah.
Okay. So we operate this organization as a business. We deal with very focused strategic planning. We deal with critical path methodology in terms of deliverables by quarter with champions. And there's a major expectation on execution here, because we're really moving the needle and yeah. creating brand new concepts for this industry for people who are visually impaired. And so with that, you do use core principles that are absolutely transferable, you know, from private business. And however, I was always a prolific board member. When I left in 2010, you know, I was the incoming chair of the Red Cross. Right. I was on the Convention and Visitors Bureau board. I was on the Envision board, the Chamber of Commerce and membership committees, and the Kansas Humane Society, very active in that. And so I've always had a knack for not-for-profits in right. terms of bringing value and enjoying the cause. And so this is a hybrid of both of those. So it's a great situation for me, because I have the empathy for the not-for-profit mm-hmm. side of the house and the criticality of mission, but then have the margin side of the house that I can bring, because the mission doesn't happen without the margin.
Right.
So our whole game plan here is all about maximizing our margin impact so we can maximize the mission impact.
Right.
And the whole strategic plan is evolved around that. So it's both.
I love that you said that it's a hybrid. I mean, I don't have nearly the experience that you've had with nonprofits. I've certainly seen the challenges that people stereotypically talk about nonprofits versus the private side. But I never understood why can't you just, I mean, nonprofit or not, those core principles that you're talking about are there. I mean, leadership principles, execution, regardless of nonprofit or not. And it seems like sometimes people say, well, they're two separate entities, and that you're always going to be hampered or dampened in growth if it's a nonprofit. I didn't understand
yeah,
that.
The only way an organization makes it a not-for-profit is by its very definition. We do not distribute profitability out to shareholders.
Right.
So that's the only difference.
It's the only difference.
It's a not-for-profit. The earnings are retained to maximize your mission and keep it internally versus distributing out those profits.
That's
the only difference that we see here between a for-profit and not-for-profit. And even by the Wichita Business Journal, I do believe we're very close, I think, to being recognized as award winners in almost every single Wichita Business Journal category there is.
Yeah.
From healthcare heroes to best in business to manufacturing, innovation, green initiatives, collaboration, diversity. We've won every one of those awards over the past 4 years, every single category, and we're a not-for-profit.
Yeah.
So there's one more proof that a not-for-profit can bring home every business award that's offered by, you know, a great group like the Wichita Business Journal, which recognizes a lot of cool things that businesses do.
Yeah. Well, and I would think, too, I always contend that if you want your folks engaged, if people feel like they're part of something bigger than themselves, they will do anything. And I've always heard the argument as well, it's a nonprofit. These people are volunteers, or we can't pay as much, there's not budget. And so they're not going to be as motivated as someone's working for. And I'm like, I just don't buy that, because if you're bought into something that you feel like you're part of something bigger than yourselves, you'll go to the ends of the earth for people. And it feels like that's the advantage, particularly in vision, has. And when I walked around the facility and I met the folks, you got this sense anyway that people understood they're part of something bigger than themselves. That's an outsider's observation. What do you think when you hear me say that?
Agree.
Yeah.
It's a great observation, because it's true. Many of the events that we sponsor, and especially envision in the state of Kansas is not strong when it comes to visual impairment, right?
Mm-hmm.
Unlike states like Utah, that has a line item in their state budget for blind, visually impaired support and training and so forth. Kansas has nothing of the sort. And our county, nothing of the sort. Our city, nothing of the sort. So there's no funds that come from the county to support Envision, no funds that come from the city that support Envision, and just some very mild state funding that we have for individuals here at a certain section of our organization. And so it's up to us to support that. And you don't do it necessarily between the hours of 8 and 5.
Mm-hmm.
So we have dozens and dozens of employees that are working with senior citizens and individuals that need assistance, and events that we do that we fund and support that are into the evenings, into the weekends, through the holidays. And so it is. It's over and beyond. Because we're serving and working with these people, that part of the fun is it is through the holidays. Part of the fun is the evenings. Part of the fun is sunrise breakfast scramblers, and whether it's sports or dance or linguistics and Braille, art. We have 21 different programs and services, and the stuff's around the clock.
Yeah,
and it takes travel. We're also becoming a nationally known organization. So now a lot of our employees are having to travel to represent. So that's a sacrifice. Anytime you're traveling out of town, it's a sacrifice. It's longer days. It's being away from your family. And they're doing it in a very gleeful way, because we're providing inspiration and opportunity to the individuals that need it.
Well, again, it goes back to, like I said, because you feel like you're part of something unique and special, and you're doing something. And again, it goes to the we're always trying to separate our professional life from our personal life, and work-life balance, which I don't like that term. It's like you have a life. You don't have a personal life and a professional life. You have a life. And like, if you can work someplace where, you got to take it all in, and family and everything, but does that make sense? Like, you're living a life instead of.
Yeah. We are fortunate at Envision, because we do have jobs, and they're very good jobs. And then as part of our job, though, we get to give back.
Right.
And so we are feeling that need within ourselves mm-hmm. every day we go to work. We have two entrances in this building that we're in today. We have a parking lot where you can come in through the back, and then we have a front entrance. I park in the back, but every single day I come through the front door, because I have the opportunity to engage with someone that maybe I haven't talked to before, or to re-engage with someone that I know very well. And so I'll always take the opportunity to walk through that front door because it's fun.
Yeah.
And it's exciting, and it's always inspirational. And so it is that. So we get that every day. We get that opportunity every single day, which many people do not have that opportunity.
What was the dream for you when you get, you byproduct of Idaho, is that right? Boise, Idaho, is that where you're from?
Yeah, Boise, Idaho, and subway car, locomotive, mass transit, New York, Louisville, Montreal, and New Jersey, and then came to Wichita in 03 for the bus company,
the bus
here,
company.
Optima Bus. So I went from New Jersey to Wichita in 2003.
And what was the dream going back to that kind of progression? I don't know, getting out of school. Was it always business? Was it always entrepreneurship? Was it always leadership? Was it, I'm going to be a CEO someday? What was the dream?
Well, the dream to get out of college was just to get a job.
Right.
You know, that's where it started. And I graduated from Boise State on a Saturday and was in New York City on a Monday, learning about the subway car business with a company out of Boise called Morrison Knudsen. And so with that, I was pretty good at it. Pretty good salesman.
So you had a job right when you graduated?
Yes. Yep. I got it about 3 weeks before graduation. And I'd worked with Morrison Knudsen previously through other type of arenas and opportunities. And someone there was helping me find a job in the transit business because I liked locomotives.
Right.
And the job that they were trying to get me didn't come through. So they hired me themselves. So I got lucky.
Yeah.
But here's where it is. You need to be out there on Monday.
And you just went.
Oh, yeah. Never been to New York before. And
was it downtown? Was it like in Manhattan? Or
it was the subway car business.
Wow.
Yeah. The plant was in upstate New York, but the deals were all done, and the subway cars themselves were all in New York City.
Yeah.
So I started out as a contract administrator mechanic on the line to understand what these things were. So
right.
I worked with the mechanics to understand how they ran. I had never seen a subway car before.
Right.
And so it was pretty cool. And I eventually became New York, New Jersey sales manager, and then a director of sales, and then eventually vice president, which was back in the home office in Boise, Idaho. And then from there, I got the opportunity to become a CEO of a supplier of window systems to subway cars.
Wow.
And that was in 1992. And so I've been running companies since then.
Since then.
Yeah, and that was a troubled company at the time.
And so as you saw yourself progressing from a personal leadership standpoint, was it like, I had the eye on the ball of being a CEO, or you were just trying to do the best that you could in whatever position you were had? And
just a very successful salesperson, government affairs individual, and then the CEO opportunity came along, and I was fortunate enough to get it.
Yeah.
And so I'd never thought about necessarily aspiring to become a CEO. The opportunity came about and I got it.
Yeah.
And so ever since then, it's been a blast. I've turned around 5 or 6 companies and in different fields, from transportation to real estate, you know, Occidental Management here in town, and really got Gary Oborney off and running with a lot of his new developments. And he's went on to do just incredible things now here locally. But I'll tell you, back in 2006, you know, that's when the first shopping centers were coming up out of the dirt.
Yep.
And he's really parlayed that very well. I'm very proud of his efforts. And then after we sold Optima Bus, that's when I got into Occidental. And then they called again, and they had a food company in Dallas, Texas, and in Santa Barbara called Future Food Brands. And the controller had embezzled $2 million in Santa Barbara.
Oh, my.
They terminated the CEO for being asleep at the wheel, and it needed to be rebranded, retooled, and re-strategized. It was mayonnaise and cream cheese-based dips, and one of the biggest ones in the country. Every Walmart, all the Whole Foods, and hummus was coming in and just destroying their market share.
Right.
So all that was going on, and I said, what do I know about food?
Right.
I don't know. You'll figure it out. And it was great. We eventually sold it to a place in Wisconsin, and it was right before I had this opportunity.
Yeah.
So,
you know, hearing you say that, and, you know, from Subways to hummus to working with the blind, what are the kind of absolute, the threads anyway, from a leadership standpoint, from a business standpoint, as you're looking back on that, what are the ones that really stand out for you that's kind of, you know, are universal, I guess, if you're saying, that have kind of attributed, or what you say, or at least you think attributes to your success?
Yes, I think, one, people.
Yeah.
It really does come down to having a great team in the major areas that you can depend on, and they can depend on you,
yeah.
And you work it as a team. And you can drive hard, you know, but as long as, you know, you support your people, you know, they're going to support you. And with that, it just, it rolls throughout the organization, and you can really get great things done. So it's always about having the best possible team you can have around you is without a doubt a key to success for a CEO.
Yeah.
Two, having a solid strategy that you've actually worked hard on, put together, and that you follow, and that you believe in that strat plan processing, and that you've done your critical thinking up front, and that carries you through the year, and then you keep it refreshed every year, and you continue to follow it. There's so many discussions that we have around the table that, wait a minute, we vetted this already through our strat plan process. We made our decisions. Stay true to it.
Yeah.
And don't start waffling on a bunch of things. Stay steady through your process, which is a solid strategic plan that is alive at all times, and you continue to keep it refreshed on an annual basis.
I like that you said keep it alive. I mean, the gap between strategic execution and strategic planning is always there in every organization.
Yep.
Everybody's like, well, how do I close that gap? I contend that it's always, like you said, hearing you say keeping it refreshed. Hey, I would contend that probably your biggest challenge is communicating that consistently. Just like you said, it's like always reminding people, and that's why having that litmus test from so that every decision can be, you know, thrown up against it, right? To keep, make sure people are going down that plan. So yeah. How do you close that gap is really what I'm getting at.
Well, what we do is we work on it together at a director level and above, and they're working with all of their teams. So the whole company has got some sort of buy-in during the process of manufacturing the plan and going through the SWOTs and the pests and so forth to verify things. But then make sure you do a good job of presenting it and laying it out to the organization and making sure all those directors are rolling it out to their team and make it visible everywhere. And I mean, I'm running a company for the blind, but our strat plan's visible,
very visible
everywhere.
Yeah.
It's around, it's in Braille, it's on the manufacturing floor, it's in the cubicles, it's in the corner offices, it's in every conference room.
Yeah.
You can't miss it. It's present, and it's boiled down to one easy, understandable chart that it's a 75-page booklet that backs it up, and it's rolled out with a critical path methodology that's measured quarterly. You can't escape it.
Right.
And if we're falling behind, it's red ink. You'll see it.
Yeah.
And then what we did, just to further that, is we created the pillars of Envision that mirrored the same principles as the strat plan that we felt was maybe even more palatable and easy to understand for every employee that we have. And it's the pillars of Envision. And this was a migration of good ideation from the staff that I wish I could have used this word pillars, you know, 20 years ago, 25 mm-hmm. years ago, because it's really cool. And it really gives us the feeling of stability when you've got the pillars of Envision. And it's hard to get off track around here.
Yeah.
You know, we're hemmed in by strat plans and pillars. And it's all very secure. It's safe. It feels strong, and it's the real deal. And so, the pillars are about employment, which is focused for the blind. It's about growth. We always want to move forward. It's about the people. It's about services that we share, and it's about the community.
Yeah.
We're big on community play at Envision. Our radio station was always for, you know, all the other not-for-profits that wanted to come in and share their story. Our in-trust room downstairs, which is a beautiful multi-purpose room, is always open for all the not-for-profits and, for that matter, the for-profit companies that want a beautiful meeting space that can accommodate a catered lunch and so forth. you know, we're here for the community.
Yeah.
And we really do take pride in being a community player. In fact, we also donate and support other not-for-profits in town that need the help and support and assistance. And so we're there for them also. So it's part of our pillars.
Yeah. It, again, from an outsider looking in, and I eat this stuff up, and communication and getting that kind of commander's intent, if I can use a Marine Corps term, communicated to the folks. I saw that even, you know, when I went in with fresh eyes and visiting both facilities, and I saw that, and I'm like, yeah, this is somebody that's, you got it in a beautiful visual style. It's easy to digest. And so I can't help but think that if you just continually, I imagine your job is just to continually remind people about this. And that, that is probably your primary job, I would imagine.
It's certainly one of the most important things I do. And then we took that pillars and we made these 59-second attachable voice cards that they could put on their refrigerator at home or their computer. And it's basically a...
What does the future hold for adventure?
That's cool.
And so it reminds them, and it goes through each of the five pillars.
That's cool.
Yeah.
I like it. Yeah. So I'm a communications junkie, as you can tell. And communicating that all of this is just going to close that gap, or at least it should, you know, the intent anyways to close that
gap. And it needs to be repeated. It needs to be consistent.
Yeah.
And it needs to be digestible. I mean, it's got to be something that, so the five employee, that we had contest where if you can tell us what the five pillars are, here's your koozie.
Yeah.
And so we went through, and at first nobody knew anything.
Yeah.
They couldn't do it. And then they had, you know, how do we remember the five pillars? And it was really cool. GPS was growth, people, and services, and then employment and community on the other end. And they all learned it. So every employee at Envision knows these five pillars. And we did it through, repetitive communication and contests, and made it fun.
That's how you change the culture.
It was fun.
Right? And it becomes the culture. Yeah. No, that's impressive. I like that. What do you think your biggest leadership challenge is now? I mean, if you're looking at where you've come as a leader, you've certainly had setbacks and successes and dare you even say failures, but you're always pressing forward. What are the challenges that you're facing now, and how are you tackling them?
Yeah, the key future challenge that we continue to strive for and vision is sustainability.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're creating a fascinating organization here that's really second to none now in the country. We are regarded as the premier blind agency in America, bar none.
Mm-hmm.
Chicago, New York, LA, Dallas. There's nothing close to what's going on with Envision with our early child development center, our rehab situation, the Envision Research Institute, the Workforce Innovation Center, which is being built now, and our manufacturing operation. You combine that, there's nothing like it. There's manufacturing operations all around the country, but nothing like the support, the Foundation and Mission Services Group that we've now built here in this 75,000 square foot structure, which will be full here by March, is to continue to create the sustainability for what we've built.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's one thing getting it built. So we've had a lot of incredible philanthropic support to build, you know, these floors out and so forth. And so the key here is to get that sustainability model set up to where the organization's fully sustainable without continued funds. And we have a very thriving manufacturing operation here and military presence in 10 states and 16 military installations. So, you know, a lot of our profitability is generated from that funds, you know, a lot of, you know, 90% of the things here. But that necessarily isn't going to last forever. And so we're continuing to try to evolve, reinvent opportunities here to create that ultimate sustainability model to keep everything running for many, many more years to come. We've been here for 85 years. The key challenge is creating that model that lasts the next 85
mm-hmm.
because it's rapidly changing. Our business, our model, the world for the blind, any not-for-profit, it's evolving, Richard. It's evolving. And if you don't stay sharp and evolve with it, you won't be here in 80 years.
Right.
And so our biggest challenge is sustainability.
Does that mean are you going into – other areas of your business, you know, other products, other, I mean.
Absolutely, yes. Yeah, we are migrating. It's very important. We are heavily dependent on the United States government for a lot of our contracts. We're heavily dependent on the United States military for a lot of our revenue generation. Mm-hmm. And we need to be more commercially oriented, which we've been working hard on our strat plan for 4 years, and it's hard to do.
Yeah.
And so, but we have to continue and aspire to be more commercially driven.
Yeah.
And that is through relationships with large organizations that have commercial arms that see value in what we provide. And so we're hard at work at that right now, but it's an absolute must. And we're accelerating that through acquisition. So we're in an acquisition mode right now. Envision will make an acquisition by the end of June of 2018. It will be in a commercial product type arena. It may or may not be in Wichita.
Right.
And then we're also moving geographical expansion. We've got a very keen eye on the state of Utah for the reasons I shared earlier in terms of our line item and our budget. And there's no blind, visually impaired presence of an agency in Utah. And so we've been working hard on, you know, Salt Lake City or arena and getting something started up there.
Yeah. Who are your heroes, if you look back?
Yeah, got a host of them, you know, and some of them that have been incredibly impactful to me from a business standpoint. George Johnson, who got me started, about the story of having a job coming out of college, mm-hmm. and was a huge mentor to me. Bill Carroll out of Boston, who gave me that first CEO job that I mentioned, was very, very impactful to me. And Tom Nathanson, who was the chairman at American Capital as I continued to move through different industries. So, you know, the first individual believed in me to hire me out of college. The second one believed in me to be able to run a company. Then the third one believed in me to be able to move from industry to industry and have the confidence that you can learn that industry and your skills are transferable.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, then my heroes are the board of Envision, who believed in me that I could come back to Wichita and run this wonderful organization that many of them have been volunteers in for many, many years. So
yeah,
it's pretty cool. And then outside of that, you know, people that are dynamic, that have an impact in the world outside of just their own business, in terms of maybe not a hero, but individuals who inspire me,
yeah,
to keep moving and pressing forward. And when I really think of someone that I could sit here and listen to for hours and listen to them talk about the world and how we can all make a difference is Joel Osteen.
Yeah.
Big fan of this guy with an attitude of every day's a Friday.
Yeah.
And really believe in that type of thinking, mm-hmm. and progressive thoughts. You can move mountains with that.
Yeah. I love that you said that. You know, one of the probably biggest lessons I've learned or got out of this show, and talking to, you know, 350 plus interviews, is that the limiting beliefs don't go away for anybody, right? And we're kind of kidding ourselves. Even some of the people you look and have achieved some significant things, and they battle with, you know, every morning they wake up and they got to quiet that gnawing voice in their head. And to me, that was kind of relieving when I heard that, right? So I'm curious about, what are your personal habits of success? What do you do as an individual? How do you kind of deal with those limiting beliefs, that negative self-talk, or, you know, when things are looking bleak, how do you press forward?
Pure determination.
Yeah.
And in inner strength.
Yeah.
And belief.
Yeah.
Just that positive thinking overcomes it. And fortunately with Envision, you know, we haven't had a ton of adversity, right?
Yeah.
We've kept the ball moving forward in a very positive manner. We've been very fortunate on many, many angles. We continue to smile. But we've really had a great run of successes on multiple fronts. And so in this experience, you know, we've dealt with that positive attitude and good things have come.
Yeah.
So it's pretty interesting. So it's been a while, right? I mean, some of the major turnarounds, I can remember those darker times
just
and
seemed impossible.
Bad luck type situations and oh no's, but it was all just about perseverance and determination. I do believe that with effort and belief, you can also come through. And it doesn't come easy. There's no easy way out here. But if you really believe to dig just one more bit deeper to get what you have to do, just believe that things can be better than they are. And it's fascinating, at least in my history, how that's been able to happen.
Well, and that's the lesson I've learned too, is that it really is less about the talent, it's all about the tenacity.
Right? Absolutely.
It's always about the tenacity.
Right? You know, and I try to talk with my team about that too, that, hey, anytime you can look at it to where you've done your best, that's usually good enough.
Yeah.
And leave it at that. As long as you can say you've done your best, it's good enough.
Yeah, and I think sometimes we buy into this myth that this path towards significance or success, however you define it, is this straight, linear, you know, perfectly executed, and that's just not the way it is. It's just kind of jagged.
It meanders.
It meanders, but you're always going forward.
Absolutely.
And you just never quit. And I think that is the differentiator between those that succeed and those that don't. It's just, you know, that's always my biggest fear and regret. It's like, well, what if I just try one more time, you know, that might be the time that pushes me
yes,
over the edge.
Of course.
Right? And that's the way you got to look at it.
Yeah. Right? It's like a hole in one.
Yeah.
You know, I know some of the greatest golfers ever that have played for 20, 25 years of great golf and a lot of it just never have got that hole in one. And I know duffers that have like two or three hole in ones.
Right.
Right. And they're nowhere close.
Right.
But it just happens. So yeah. Always believe that it is right around the corner.
Yeah.
Because many times it is.
Yeah.
And then it happens.
I think that leaders, if you're in the leadership game, that you have to suspend the belief on how things are going to get done. You just know they're going to get done, right? Even though the odds are insurmountable.
Absolutely know it's going to get done. And we have a lot of discussions around this table that we're sitting at right now, which is where it's just not an option. It's going to get done.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it is. We do have a good team of individuals here that we've surrounded ourselves with, and they're all similar in terms of their belief that they can get things done.
Yeah.
And you're very fortunate when you get a team assembled, and sometimes it takes three or four or five tries before that team eventually gets assembled that you can depend on and that all share that belief that, yes, we can get it done.
I think the ideal is having that intensity of will and that tenacity piece coupled with this humble, teachable spirit.
Yep.
And you combine that, I think that's the ultimate leadership.
I agree with you, Richard. I mean, that's exactly what it is here.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, and I see it. I sense
it. I touch every employee on the floor.
Yeah.
Every role, whether you're winding bags or doing gun slips or helping blind people how to draw. I mean, every individual in this organization, I know every one of them.
Yeah.
Which is, right now, I think we're at about 335 people.
Yeah.
And make it a big point to engage with them, and everybody's a believer.
Yeah, no, I sense it. You know, and again, as a student of leadership junkie, and they get the sense. I mean, I sense that here, and I just think it's great. And one of the reasons why I wanted to have you on the show. How can people, as we wrap up here, how can people get in touch with Envision, learn more about Envision, reach out, help out with Envision? What would you want people to reach out to?
It's very easy. We have a great website, www.envisionus.com. And to learn more about Envision, learn how to volunteer, learn how to give. If you're interested in being employed here, there's a great career page. There's always openings in terms of across the spectrum at Envision that are upward mobility type of opportunities. But our website is the best tool to learn more or to engage with Envision. And there's always people available to talk to you. So
right.
That's the best way.
Great. I'll have links to all this on the post. I encourage all my listeners to reach out and learn more about Envision. It's a CEO, in my opinion, that gets it and is executing all on the dose of leadership principles we talk about on this show. So, Michael, it's an honor to finally sit
down
with you.
Thank you, Richard. It's always great seeing you.
Yeah, thank you, sir.
Hey, thanks for tuning into the show. Go to richardryerson.com or doseofleadership.com and fill out the contact page and reach out to me. Let me know where you're at your leadership journey. Also, if you want access to my brand new online leadership course to help become a better leader, go to legacyleaderblueprint.com. Fill out your email and you gain access to a free 12-minute video that will reveal the top secrets of leadership and also show you how you can gain access, exclusive access, to my online leadership course. That's legacyleaderblueprint.com. Hope to see you on the inside. Thanks for tuning into the show.
You love podcasts, the stories, the laughs, the unexpected turns. But when this episode ends, the silence starts. Not anymore. Audiobooks.com turns that silence into your next great adventure. With over 450,000 titles, from bestsellers to hidden gems, your love for listening just found its new best friend. And because you already know the joy of audio, we're giving you 3 free audiobooks to start your journey. Imagine your favorite podcast, now with unlimited episodes. That's audiobooks.com. Keep the story going. Sign up for your free trial at audiobooks.com/podcast-free today. Because for podcast lovers like you, the end of an episode is just the beginning. That's audiobooks.com/podcast-free.